believe. Teddy got in the car and drove back to the hotel. It was nice handing it off to the valet without having to worry if he'd look in the trunk. Teddy went into the lobby and used one of the hotel's computers to send an encrypted email to Warp Lord 924. Any news? As he expected, Kevin was online. The answer came back almost immediately. Call me. Teddy sighed. He logged off the computer, went back to his room, and called on a burner phone. Kevin answered right away.
Is it you?
It's me. What's up? Don't tell me you were wrong about C closed parentheses.
No, that was right. It's just more than you asked for.
Oh?
You wanted one hit in the last few days. The name in question had almost 100.
Really?
Yes, and I was able to trace them, too. Most of the searches originated in Syria. Does that upset your theory?
Not at all.
You say most of the searches?
Yeah,
there were a couple from Paris. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay, good work.
Is there anything else you need?
No, but check out the names now and then. See if anything else comes through.
You think it will?
No.
Teddy hung up and assessed the situation. Kevin's news just confirmed that Workman was the man. The searches originating in Syria made perfect sense. Teddy trashed the cell phone and took out another. He was going through them like water. He called Jacques in Paris.
Do you know who this is?
Yes, I do. I didn't expect to hear from you.
You're not. You haven't heard from me since I left.
Of course. What do you need?
The reservations at Larrington. Could you look up the Syrian delegation for me?
Yes. Let me see. Syrians, party of five. Fahd, Syrian strongman, suspected arms dealer. Aziz, his personal bodyguard, and three scientists, two zoologists and one microbiologist. No, wait, I have a late cancellation. Make that two scientists.
It wasn't the microbiologist who cancelled, was it?
No, one of the zoologists.
Do you have their names?
The zoologist is Dr. Chaim. The microbiologist is Dr. Badim.
And when are they checking in?
Let's see. Actually, tonight.
Good work. Remember, you didn't hear from me. I'll call you if I need you.
Teddy went down to the lobby and did a global search for the names Jacques had given him. There was a lot about Fahd, none of it good. He was a strong man, more feared than respected. What made him dangerous was his unpredictability. He was ostensibly in charge of terrorist activities, but it was not clear to whom he reported. Everyone reported to him, however. He was ruthless, cunning, and ambitious, a person to avoid. In every picture his eyes were hard. His face could be described as severe. He was unmarried, but known to enjoy the company of women. Aziz had only one name, but that name was notorious. He was described as everything from Fahd's assistant to his bodyguard. The descriptions stopped just short of calling him Fahd's assassin. There were no pictures of Aziz, but Teddy had a pretty good idea of who he was. There was nothing about the zoology professor, except his education and teaching position. There was more on the microbiologist. He had his doctorate. His thesis was on infectious diseases. Teddy put on a bathing suit and went down to the beach. He got a towel and a beach chair and an umbrella. He took off his shirt, kicked off his flip-flops, and waded into the sea. It was the first time he'd been swimming since Lance had interrupted his rehab regimen. He wasn't really swimming now, mostly just bobbing up and down and making sure his head didn't go under. Teddy had removed his Stetson, but he was still made up like Floyd Maitland.
It would be embarrassing if his mustache fell off. After a nice dip, Teddy went back to the room, dried off, and put on the terry cloth bathrobe the hotel provided. Maitland had an iPad in his briefcase. Teddy switched it on and scrolled through the man's emails to see if there was anything useful. He found a few dealing with the convention, but nothing particularly helpful. Teddy hadn't really expected to find an email with the subject line, "Hunt an Endangered Species." Still, there was nothing to indicate that Floyd Maitland's interest in rare animals was in any way out of the ordinary. Teddy Googled Floyd Maitland to see if he could come up with anything that would help with his impersonation of the man. If he met someone Maitland knew well, nothing would help, but barring that, any little thing might sell the facade. His search was fruitless. Jacques had done a good job. Teddy didn't find anything he didn't already know. Teddy switched his search to images. In all the pictures, there were certain constants. Maitland always wore his Stetson hat, and he always wore his cowboy boots, and he always wore a broad leather belt with an ornate buckle. Teddy wished Maitland's belt fit him, but the one he had bought would be close enough. Teddy noticed one other thing. In almost all of the photos, Maitland also wore a gun belt and holster, with what appeared to be a .45 caliber Colt revolver. He wasn't wearing it at what appeared to be a banquet, but otherwise it was always there. Teddy had searched Maitland's room pretty thoroughly, and could have sworn no such gun was in it, but he searched it again. It was easier this time, since he knew what he was looking for. Starting with the premise of where a .45 caliber Colt revolver might hide, there were not a lot of options. It did not take long for Teddy to satisfy himself the gun was not there. Teddy couldn't imagine the man traveling without it, despite the trouble it would take to smuggle it into France. Teddy got dressed, put on his Stetson hat, and went down to the front desk. "Excuse me, Floyd Maitland, I'm in room 432.
"Yes, Mr. Maitland. Help me out, will you, partner?"
Teddy shook his head ruefully.
"I am juggling so many things I just can't keep track of what I'm doing. Did I leave anything in the hotel safe, or was that at the last hotel?"
"Let me check." The clerk looked it up.
"Yes, Mr. Maitland, you left a box to be placed in the hotel safe. It's there now."
"Well, that's a relief. Could I have it, please? I'm checking out tomorrow. It would be just like me to forget it."
"Of course, Mr. Maitland. You understand the safe is locked. I will have to get the manager to open it."
"I'd be worried if you didn't," Teddy said. 15 minutes later, the desk clerk presented Teddy with the box. Teddy took it up to Maitland's room and opened it. Inside was exactly what he expected, a gun belt and holster with a .45 caliber Colt revolver. The revolver was empty, but the loops in the gun belt all held bullets, and there was a box of ammunition. Teddy took the revolver, flipped the cylinder out, spun it, and flipped it closed again. Teddy put the gun belt on and slipped the .45 into the holster. He looked good in it. 58. Teddy flew back to Paris the next day. He was alert leaving baggage claim in case Maitland had arranged for someone to meet the plane. He hadn't. Teddy got a cab, took it to Larrington Hotel, and checked in at the front desk.
"Floyd Maitland, I have a reservation."
"Ah, yes, Monsieur Maitland, you are in the mini suite, 619.
"Mini suite?" Teddy said. "Son, I'm from Texas. There ain't nothing mini about me. You must be mistaken."
The clerk blinked and adjusted to the situation. The guest, however unreasonable, was always right.
"But of course, monsieur, we have a standard suite for you, just as you requested. You are in 1405.
"That's more like it, then," Teddy said.
He had a feeling Suite 1405 was exactly the same as Suite 619.
"Are you here for the convention, monsieur?"
"That's right.
Registration for the convention is on the mezzanine level."
"Registration? I'm registered. But, of course, registration is where you check in.
You will be given a program and schedule and your name tag."
"Fine," Teddy said. "Now then, I have some valuables I would like to store in the hotel safe. Do I give them to you?"
"Absolutely. There is a safe in your suite, but anything too large for it we would be happy to keep for you. Now, if I could have your credit card and photo ID?"
The desk clerk ran Teddy's credit card and then passed it and the ID back.
"Now, if you would just sign here."
Teddy had practiced signing Maitland's signature on the plane. He dashed off a pretty convincing facsimile. The desk clerk couldn't have cared less. He was already clapping his hands for a bellboy.
"Take monsieur to 1405.
As he stepped into the elevator, Teddy smiled at how easy it was to impersonate a wealthy Texan. Loud and brash seemed to do the trick. Teddy followed the bellboy to a suite that was much more luxurious than he needed. It even had a hot tub. He unpacked and then took the box containing Maitland's gun belt down to the front desk. The clerk assured him that whatever was in the box would be safely locked away. Teddy went up to the mezzanine level, where he found a long table with three members of the convention staff sitting behind it. On the table in front of them were signs, A-G, H-O, and P-Z. It took Teddy a moment to recall his name was Maitland, and he should be in the H-O line.
"Hi," he said. "Floyd Maitland. I'm registered with the convention."
The staff woman waiting on him riffled through the file cards in a little box and came up with a printed name tag.
"Here you go, Floyd Maitland. Oh, you have a star on your name tag."
She held it up and showed it to him. The name tag had the conference logo, which was a baby panda, and the name Floyd Maitland in large letters. Under the name, in smaller bold type, it read USA. In the bottom right corner, there was a gold star printed on the name tag.
"And what's that mean, ma'am?"
Teddy said. The woman positively beamed.
"It signifies your registration for the special panel, the one by invitation only."
"Ah, yes, of course. I've been handing out the name tags, and there weren't that many stars. You must be very important." "Just know the right people, I guess," Teddy said.
He was grateful for the woman's enthusiasm. Now he knew that anyone else with a star on their name tag would also be attending the mysterious panel. The woman grabbed one of the canvas bags behind her and set it on the table.
"Inside you will find your name tag holder, program, and schedule, with the full description of the panels, so you can choose which ones you want to go to. And there's a map of the hotel showing where the panel rooms are. There are also some promotional materials, including some books authored by fellow attendees. It's a lot to carry around. You'll probably want to stash it in your room before you start exploring."
"And the panels start tomorrow?"
"That's right. There's an opening reception tonight at 6 in the Grand Ballroom. The only event going on now is the animal exhibit."
"Animal exhibit?"
"Oh, yes. A wide variety of small animals is on display in the convention center, but you'll probably want to steer clear."
"Oh? Why?" She smiled.
"It's a zoo."
59. It was a zoo in more ways than one. The convention hall was filled with animals and their handlers. And in addition to the hotel guests, the organizers had sold day passes to the public as part of their conservation fundraising. The convention floor was mobbed with families with children pressing forward to see the creatures. Ironically, some of the less rare species grabbed the most attention. Leopard cubs, lion cubs. Indeed, anything with cub was immensely popular, and understandably so. They were incredibly cute. Teddy made a circuit of the floor, looking for fellow conventioneers, identified by the cloth name tag pouches worn around the neck. There weren't many yet. Teddy gave up on the convention area and decided to look in the bar. It was jammed. Evidently, everyone else had had the same idea. Patrons were lined up three deep the whole length of the bar, trying to order drinks. The Syrian contingent might have been there, but there was no way to tell. Teddy decided to wait for the opening ceremony. It would be easy to spot his quarry then. All he had to do was meet them. It wouldn't be easy. Friendly and gregarious was unlikely to be their manner. Teddy expected the Syrians to keep to themselves and resist any intrusion on their privacy. Not that that would stop him. Teddy was lucky to have chosen a loud, flamboyant persona. Missing social cues and being aggressively friendly was right in character. The fact that they all had stars on their name tags could be seized upon as a momentous occurrence rather than just noted in passing. Toward that end, Teddy figured it would be good if the Syrians noticed him before he made his approach. He just had to make sure that happened. Teddy went back to the front desk. "Excuse me, Floyd Maitland, I just checked in. I left a box in the hotel safe." "Yes, sir. Could I get it, please?"
60.
The grand ballroom was set up for the opening ceremony. There were cash bars in all four corners with free wine and soft drinks at tables in between. There was a buffet table down the middle, which proved to have an assortment of hors d'oeuvres. The ballroom was crowded, but not nearly so much so as the convention hall zoo. The convention itself was not a family affair. The plight of endangered species was a serious business that drew the attention of the most noted scientists and conservationists from around the world. Teddy was decked out for the opening ceremony in his cowboy boots, Stetson hat, blue jeans, and leather jacket. He also wore his six-shooter, which he twirled occasionally. He was quite good at it. He'd practiced up in his room, but it didn't take much. Teddy had played cowboys as a stuntman. He could draw the gun, twirl it, and stick it back in the holster in one fluid motion, without ever taking his eyes off the man he was looking at. Teddy got himself bourbon on the rocks. He elbowed his way through the crowd, holding his drink aloft, and looking for the Syrians. He spotted Aziz first. The little hitman had just gotten a drink at the cash bar. It was clear, probably vodka. He tossed it off, set the glass down, and marched back to the others. Teddy took a moment to size up the group. Fahd was frightening. He was a remorseless, take-no-prisoners type, every bit as deadly as Aziz. But while the little hitman would kill, Fahd would order it done. Teddy had no problem sorting out the scientists. The severe, humorless one, who looked like he belonged behind a Bunsen burner, would be the microbiologist. The fidgety, nervous one, who looked eager to please, would be the zoologist. Teddy wondered if the man was just shy in social situations, or if his anxiety had anything to do with the fact that there had originally been two Syrian zoologists scheduled to attend, and the unsettling thought, maybe they were an endangered species. Teddy finished off his drink. He bellied up to the bar.
"Hey, barkeep! Barkeep! Another bourbon on the rocks!"
When the bartender handed it to him, Teddy handed it back.
"No, make it a double,"
he cried, pushing his hat brim back with the barrel of his Colt 45. The bartender's eyes widened.
"I don't believe you're allowed to have that in here."
"Nonsense," Teddy said. "Show me the rule. If you can't show me the rule, I don't have to do it."
He slapped money down on the bar and said,
"Keep it,"
and grabbed his drink.
"See? I'm a sport. Only got a single, and I paid you for a double. How do you like that?"
As he turned away from the table, out of the corner of his eye, Teddy could see the bartender beckon one of the hotel staff over. Teddy waved his drink with one hand and his Stetson with the other. He clapped his hat back on his head, drew his gun, twirled it, and returned it to the holster with a flourish. He careened into the middle of the floor, stopped, and took a huge pull of his drink. He drew his gun and twirled it again. Many of the other guests were edging away from him, and men in hotel staff uniforms were weaving their way through the crowd. A man who appeared to be with hotel security came walking up.
"Excuse me," he said quietly, "if monsieur would please come with me."
"No, I won't come with you," Teddy said loudly. "I paid a lot to be at this convention, and I got a right to be here."
"I need to talk to you."
"If you want to talk to me, do it after the reception."
"I'm sorry, monsieur, but you cannot bring a gun into the royal ballroom. It is against the law."
"Prove it," Teddy said.
The security guard was taken aback. The man with him, probably a desk clerk, said in a conciliatory manner,
"Monsieur, we would prefer not to involve the authorities. If you would care to leave your gun at the front desk, we would be glad to hold it for you, but you cannot have it here."
"In my country, we have Second Amendment rights," Teddy said.
"In your country, I would not bother you. In my country, I must hold your gun."
"All right," Teddy said, "but you owe me a drink. Tell him to give me a drink on the house."
The staff man nodded to the bartender.
"Bourbon," Teddy said.
He took off his gun belt, handed it over, and headed for the bar. He didn't need the gun belt anymore. It had served its purpose. Everyone knew who he was.
61.
A professorial-looking gentleman in a tweed jacket tapped on the microphone.
"Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Lucius Camus,
and I am delighted to be hosting the 3rd Annual Endangered Species Preservation Conference." There was a round of applause. "We want you to know how much we value your support for this worthy cause. In addition to the pledge drives, raffle tickets, and charity auctions, nothing beats a cash donation. And nothing makes you feel better than to know you are contributing to the preservation of these endangered species. But you are here to enjoy yourselves, as I am sure you will. We have triple-track programming scheduled. We're sorry you won't be able to attend all the panels, but you will always have 3 excellent options to choose from. Afterward, you can exchange ideas with someone who saw one of the others. And I happen to know some of our lecturers. If you buy them a drink in the bar, they will never stop talking." This sally was met with appreciative laughter. "Panels will begin tomorrow morning at 9. All panels are open to everyone except for those few panels designated by a star. Only guests with stars on their name tags will be admitted to those panels. Please don't feel discriminated against. It's because they paid extra." Lucius gestured to the man standing next to him.
"And now it is my great pleasure to introduce Monsieur René D'Argent, our benefactor who has generously underwritten the conference for the 3rd year running. Without his help, none of this would have been possible. Ladies and gentlemen, Monsieur René D'Argent."
René D'Argent stepped to the microphone. He was a strikingly handsome man, with silver sideburns and a trim mustache. In a custom-tailored navy blue suit, He looked like he would be equally comfortable spearheading a multi-million-dollar business deal or escorting a movie star to a Hollywood Film Awards. He was the type of man who was catnip to the ladies, and knew it. René D'Argent dismissed the applause as unnecessary, though Teddy had a feeling he'd have been miffed if he didn't get it. His smile was benevolent, if a trifle condescending.
"My friends, I cannot thank you enough for showing up to support this worthy cause.
I am doing everything I can to aid these endangered species, but I cannot do it alone. Now more than ever, we need your support. Listen to what the panelists have to say, and let your hearts unlock your checkbooks. This is our third annual conference. Let's make it the best one ever." As René D'Argent stepped away from the microphone, a stunning brunette in an evening dress slipped her arm through his and draped herself on his shoulder. He put his arm around her and held her to him. She smiled up at him affectionately. It was Kristen. René D'Argent left with Kristen shortly after he spoke. Teddy didn't try to follow. He didn't want to hover over her, and he had other fish to fry. Instead, he detoured back to his room, took out a fresh burner phone, and called Jacques.
"You know who this is?
Glad you called. We've got trouble."
"Oh?
Workman's gone dark."
"Oh?
At first I thought he was just undercover, but no one knows where he is. There are rumors bouncing around. He defected, he was abducted, he was a mole to begin with, or that he's dead."
"What's the general consensus?"
"There is none, just a lot of conflicting opinions."
"What does Norton think?"
"He's too cool to let on."
"Is anything being done to locate him?"
"I'm out of that loop. The fact that he's missing is gossip. What's being done about it is intel."
"Right.
What's your theory?"
"I don't have one."
"So what do you want me to do?"
"Let me know if they find him."
"Will do. So why do you call?"
"Two things.
What have you got on René D'Argent?"
"The Silver Fox?"
"I beg your pardon?"
"That's what they call him, the Silver Fox.
What about him?"
"He's underwriting the convention."
"Is he a great philanthropist?"
"Not that I know of. He never puts money into anything that doesn't turn a profit. He's a ruthless corporate CEO who built his empire through hostile takeovers and leveraged buyouts. Contributing to a cause is completely out of character."
"Is that right?"
"Oh, yes.
But taking the credit for it isn't. He's the type who's happy accepting a humanitarian award on TV at the same time he's purchasing cheap real estate and evicting the tenants to put up a factory."
"You didn't know he was at the conference?"
"I don't know anything about the conference except who has hotel reservations for it. René D'Argent lives in Paris. He maintains a hotel room full-time for his assignations, but it's not at Larrington."
"Nice guy.
And you don't know what his angle here is?"
"Like I say, I didn't even know he was there."
"What about the agency?"
"What about it?"
"As far as you know, they haven't taken any interest in the convention?"
"Not at all. If any agents have taken an interest, they're pursuing it outside official channels. Not totally atypical for early reconnaissance, if the agent just has a hunch but nothing to back it up yet," Jacques said. "But once they check in, they have to report to the chief and get his go-ahead on an official mission."
"Interesting."
"Why is that interesting?"
Teddy laughed. "It's the type of thing people say when they don't understand what's going on." Teddy hung up the phone. He wasn't happy. Kristen's presence at the conference wasn't good. From what he'd learned of her, she fancied herself a female James Bond. Going off on her own and failing to report in to Norton was her standard M.O. Teddy wondered if Kristen's investigation was due to Workman's disappearance. As far as she was concerned, he was a fellow agent, not a mole. She must have backtracked what he was working on and found a link to the Syrians, not realizing he was actually in their pocket. She'd follow his lead on the conference and want to finish up what Workman had started. The fact that he was missing and presumed dead wouldn't faze her. To her, it would be an incentive to avenge a fellow agent. She'd want to check out the conference and see what the Syrians were up to. She couldn't come at them directly and risk winding up like Workman, but she needed an overview of what was going on. The answer was René D'Argent, the playboy entrepreneur who was financing the convention. Making a play for him was just the type of flamboyant gesture she'd be apt to try. On his arm, she'd have access to everything, and he'd be eager to show off. Through him, she could get inside information on the Syrians. Her only problem was, she couldn't approach them directly. Teddy could.
62. Teddy went back to the bar room, grabbed a glass of bourbon, and barged up to the Syrians. "Hey, Star Buddies," he said, pointing at the stars on the name tags.
"I heard what that guy said.
We're the chosen ones. Can you say that? Is that a religion thing or something? We can go to the panel and they can't, right, buddy?"
Fodd turned up his nose. "It is just another panel for which we happen to have admission." He spoke swiftly and quietly, an obvious effort to quiet down the brash Texan.
Of course," Teddy said. "I don't mean to be loud, I just am. We do things big in Texas. Not a quiet state, but look what happened here. Took my gun. Did you see that? Actually took my gun. I feel naked without it." Fodd said nothing and tried to ignore him. "I'm a big game hunter," Teddy persisted. "Do you hunt?" He looked at Aziz. "I bet he does." Aziz's expression did not change. Clearly he hadn't recognized Teddy. Teddy turned back to Fodd.
"Floyd Maitland, pleased to meet you."
Fodd ignored the extended hand.
"Mr. Maitland, the instructions regarding the small panel were quite specific, and chief among them is the discretion of the attendees. I suggest you read them over."
Fodd turned away and began to gather his group, but Teddy was not deterred. He turned to the two scientists, Dr. Chaim and Dr. Badim, according to Jacques' notes.
"You guys read 'em?"
The scientists looked at each other.
"Hey," Teddy said, "this is a party. Have a drink. Loosen up."
The zoologists had a drink. That would be Dr. Chaim. He held it up as if for show and tell. Teddy shook his head.
"You guys look like you're on your way to the gallows. Hey, let me buy you a round."
"That is not necessary," Fodd said.
"Of course it isn't necessary. It's a gesture of goodwill."
Teddy turned to Dr. Badim.
"You there, drink up. Drink up. What are you going to do, nurse one drink all evening? This is a party. Drink up. I'll get you another." "And you there," he said to Dr. Chaim, "what are you having?"
Dr. Chaim looked guilty, as if he'd been caught with it.
"A Manhattan." Teddy burst out laughing. "A Manhattan? How about that? You're drinking our drinks. I'd watch this one. He might just defect."
Fodd did not find that funny. Teddy hadn't expected him to. Goading the strong man was part of his game. It was also fun.
"So what will you have?" Teddy asked Fodd.
"I'm not drinking."
"No, no, 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 no. You gotta have something. You don't have to have some candy-ass American drink, but something. What will it be?"
Fodd realized the man wouldn't give up until he answered.
Vodka. On the rocks?
No.
And you?
Teddy said to Aziz.
He will have vodka.
Did you hear that?
Teddy said.
You will have vodka.
Teddy plowed his way to the bar, pulling out money as he went.
Lot of drinks, he announced. 3 shots of vodka, a Manhattan, and a bourbon on the rocks.
He waved a $100 bill at the bartender.
Can you take it out of this?
But of course.
Good. Put them on a tray, and you can keep whatever's left.
All thoughts of Teddy being a nuisance were forgotten. The bartender was all too happy to fill the order. Teddy took the tray back to the Syrian contingent.
Here you go. Bottoms up. That's what we say in my country. It means drink the damn thing. Don't just hold it. See? Drinking turns the bottom of the glass up.
Teddy handed the Manhattan to Dr. Kayyem.
Oh, you got a straw. He shrugged. Bottoms up doesn't work with straws.
Fodd was clearly planning his group's exit. Teddy waved his arms, calling everyone into a huddle.
Come here. Come here. Look, about the panel, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to be quiet like a mouse. But it meets every day, right? And the first session is tomorrow afternoon?
Teddy included the 2 scientists.
You boys will be going to that?
Dr. Badim said nothing, but Dr. Kayyem, eager to please, said,
Yes, and there is an introductory meeting for our panel tonight at 9.
The look Fodd gave Dr. Kayyem was pure venom. 63. Teddy toned it down for the panel. He'd created enough of an impression for the Syrians and didn't need to draw any further attention. The panel was, as Teddy had expected, in the room Marcel Dubois had shown him, the one with the single solid door. There were 2 men at the door checking names. It was not enough to show your name tag with the star. You also had to show a photo ID to prove that you were the person named on it, and not someone who just happened to get hold of the name tag. The men were passing themselves off as convention staff, but Teddy recognized them for what they really were. Muscle. Teddy saw the Syrian party was already seated in the front row, and he took a seat in the 2nd row, at the opposite end of the room. More panel-goers drifted in. They filled the 1st 3 rows. Nobody sat behind Teddy in his cowboy hat. The meeting included gentlemen of all nationalities. Many had zoologists in tow. When everyone had been seated and the doors had been closed and locked, Fernand Guillaume, a dapper Frenchman with the air of an auctioneer, took the lectern. He glanced around the room and smiled.
My friends, have any of you been to Las Vegas? There is a saying, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. The same is true of this panel. Since you are here, you already know that, but I cannot emphasize it enough. Anyone found to have loose lips will be banned from any future opportunities of this kind.
No one took exception to the remark. It was greeted with nods of approval.
Now then, down to business. This panel is entitled Rarest of the Rare. That is absolutely true. Our presenters will be showing you some of the rarest animals in the world. Many are on the endangered species list. Some will be there soon. There is one unifying factor. It is illegal to hunt these animals. A violation of this law carries a stiff sentence. In the privacy of this room, we acknowledge the distinction between laws of man and of nature. We speak freely behind locked doors, and we never speak freely outside them. Only in this room may your business be conducted. We are divided into 2 groups, the buyers and the sellers. You may sell the animals, you may buy the animals.
No one is going to ask you what you wish to do with the animal you bought.
Though Teddy had anticipated the secret purpose of the mysterious and exclusive panel, he was still jolted to hear the truth of it. An illicit marketplace of endangered animals hiding in plain sight, right in the midst of a conference on conservation.
Some animals will be presented on the panel. Some can be seen on exhibit in the convention center. The larger animals will be shown in photos and on videotape, and our organization has verified the existence and advertised condition of those creatures. The auction will begin tomorrow, so for now I hope only to whet your appetite.
He stepped aside and gestured to the screen behind him. A video montage showed some of the animals in question: a snow leopard, a sea otter, lemurs, and a fierce-looking rodent-like creature that apparently was a Tasmanian devil. A polar bear that looked scrawny. Teddy wondered if that was part of the allure, shooting a truly endangered, sick animal. The black rhino looked positively magnificent. When it appeared on screen, it was as if the room took a collective breath. Teddy glimpsed over at the Syrians to gauge their reaction, but Fahd and Aziz wore carefully blank faces. One of the animals on offer was of particular interest to them, though which was still unclear to Teddy. The bigger question was, what did Fahd want with an endangered animal in the first place? 64. Teddy noticed one of the German contingent seated at the bar. He squeezed in next to the German and ordered a bourbon on the rocks. When it came, he raised it, took a sip, and made it seem as if he had noticed the German for the first time. The German's name was Hans. He had a star on his name tag. Teddy pointed to it.
You were at the panel.
Da.
You speak English?
Hans waggled his hand. The German had a blonde crew cut, broad shoulders, and a solid build. He could have passed for a gym coach. Or a hunter.
Teddy lowered his voice. Do you shoot?
Hans shrugged helplessly. Teddy mimed raising a rifle. Hans pushed his arms down. He lowered his voice.
You do not do that here.
Teddy grinned.
I thought you knew a little English. Hey, barkeep, give my friend a beer.
The bartender lined another beer up behind the one Hans was drinking. Teddy lowered his voice.
No more gestures. I think we understand each other. We're here because we like animals. Now, I like a Siberian tiger myself.
Hans frowned.
You use many words.
Sorry, Teddy said. What animal do you like?
The German's eyes gleamed.
Black rhino.
Yes, Teddy said. That would be something. I've never even seen a black rhino.
Another German appeared behind Hans. His name was Fritz. He was clearly cut from the same mold as Hans, though he appeared to be in charge. He launched into a torrent of German. Teddy couldn't catch every word, but he knew enough German to catch the gist of what Fritz was saying. He was reminding Hans not to be indiscreet. Teddy excused himself, giving Hans a hearty slap on the shoulder as he left. He wandered around the bar, striking up conversations with any panelists he could. It wasn't easy. The Chinese contingent kept to themselves. The Russians were rowdy, throwing back shots of vodka and talking loudly in Russian, but it seemed to be mostly about World Cup soccer and the attributes of the waitress. And the Palestinians did not seem to be present. Still, Teddy managed to collect a good deal of information. A random sampling of the people in the bar confirmed his theory. The groups with scientists couldn't have cared less about the black rhino. Their objectives remained opaque to him.
The groups with hunters wanted to kill it. Not if he could help it.
65. Millie met Lance in front of the lion cage.
The National Zoo? Lance said irritably.
Our friend thought it would be fitting.
This is not a joke, Millie. This is serious business.
I will pass the sentiment along, but do you expect our friend to be chastened by it?
You're pretty sassy lately.
Sorry, I'm trying to give you the flavor of the communication. Our friend's attitude tends to seep through.
So, what's the news? What's he up to?
He's making progress. He expects to uncover the mole, but not by infiltrating the embassy as you'd intended. It's essential that everyone think he's gone home. Then they'll let down their guard.
I know his theory. You told me that last time. I didn't like it then, and I don't like it now. Why am I here?
He needs petty cash money. He needs you to wire it to a bank in Paris. I have the account number.
You dragged me out here for petty cash?
That's right. For God's sake, couldn't you advance it yourself? I'm afraid not. He needs a €500,000 right away. No questions asked, no strings attached. It's the only way under which the operation can continue. If he can't get it, he's coming home.
He's extorting me.
He said you'd use that word. He wants a €500,000 and he won't say why. Actually, he did. He needs to buy something in order to keep up his cover.
He needs to buy something for €500,000. What does he need to buy?
A black rhino.
Lance's mouth fell open.
He wants to buy a black rhino?
Yes. That's why he had us meet in the zoo. He said you'd say that, too. He could practically have this conversation without you.
Okay, why does he want to buy a black rhino? What's he going to do with it?
Shoot it.
66. Teddy got up the next morning and checked his email. Sure enough, there was an encrypted email from Millie. Money being transferred. Should be in by this morning. He showered, dressed in another Floyd Maitland get-up, and made his way down to the hotel restaurant for breakfast. Teddy spotted one of the Palestinians in the lobby. There were four of them, according to Jacques, two of them scientists, but this man had a military bearing. He also had a hostile air.
Teddy would have given him a wide berth, but the man made a point of walking right up to him.
Omar, according to his name tag, said, "Do I know you?" Somehow he made it sound like an accusation. Teddy grinned.
"Well, now, I don't believe we've met, unless it was sometime when I'd had a few. Floyd Maitland, pleased to meet you."
Omar made no move to take his outstretched hand. His eyes ran over Teddy's face as if memorizing every detail.
"Is that so?" he said coldly. Then he turned and walked away.
Teddy snapped a picture of Omar with his cell phone. He would have texted it to Jacques to run through face recognition, but he was out of burner phones, and he couldn't risk using his own. Teddy went back to the lobby computer. He uploaded the photo from his phone and sent Kevin an encrypted email. "Kevin, run the attached photo through face recognition. Yes, I know you don't have access to the CIA database, but do it anyway. He's going by the name of Omar."
"But it may be an alias."
"Get back to me as fast as you can.
Your answer will tell me what I have to do."
The last part wasn't entirely true. Teddy knew what he had to do, regardless of Kevin's answer. He had to get some more burner phones and pick up €500,000. Up to now, Teddy had trusted Maitland's room safe for a few choice possessions. Omar's malevolent presence made that no longer tenable. Teddy opened the safe and took out his handgun, his cash supply, and his travel equipment bag,
with a few special items he'd held out from the larger equipment bag locked in the hotel safe at the pier. Teddy spent a few minutes booby-trapping the room so that he would know if Omar had been there. Then he took off his Floyd Maitland outfit and dressed up as Devon Billingham. He touched up his face to make sure it matched the passport photo and took a cab to the Hotel St. Pierre. He walked up to the front desk and said, "Hi, Devon Billingham, are there any messages for me?" The desk clerk checked.
"Ah, Monsieur Billingham, there are no messages, but your room has not been used for several days."
"Yes, I said that might happen. That's why I paid for the week in advance. I had to make some side trips, but I'm here now and would like to retrieve a trunk that was stored for me in the hotel safe." Teddy slipped the desk clerk a bill.
"Could you expedite that for me, please?"
"Would you like the trunk brought to your room?"
"Yes. How soon will that be done?"
"Right away."
Teddy went up to his room. It didn't look lived in. The only sign of occupancy were the toiletries in the bathroom. He called the bank. "This is Devon Billingham. I'm awaiting a transfer of funds. Can you tell me if it's been processed yet? I want to come down to the bank and complete the transaction."
"Yes, I'll hold."
There was a knock on the door. It was the bellboy with the trunk. He tipped the bellboy and said into the phone,
"Really? Good. I'll be right down."
Teddy unlocked the trunk, took out three more burner phones, and locked it up again. When he left, he would leave it at the front desk to be returned to the safe. He would have loved to have transferred it to Larrington, but he didn't want to deal with having two packages in their safe. Plus, the less overlap of identities, the better, even in something so trivial. In Teddy's experience, one never knew who might be taking an interest. Teddy messed up the bed sheets so the chambermaid would stop worrying about it and went down to the bank. Once the bankers realized who Teddy was, he was treated like a king. A sudden infusion of a €500,000 into his bank account had earned him instant respect. Assistant managers were falling all over each other, asking how they might assist him. His answer did not please them. They disappeared into the inner office with the news. Moments later, the bank manager himself came out. He surveilled Teddy critically and frowned.
"You want a cashier's check for €500,000?
"I do."
"You are taking your money out of the bank?"
"Not all of my money, just the most recent deposit."
"I don't understand."
"I want to transfer funds. I need a cashier's check to do it. I want your bank to provide it."
"You do not intend to keep the €500,000 in our bank?"
"Not that €500,000.
"You intend to deposit another €500,000?
"I might," Teddy said. "It depends on the service I receive here."
5 minutes later, the head teller delivered a cashier's check for €500,000. The bank manager presented it with a bit of a flourish. Teddy inspected it, smiled, and slipped it into his jacket pocket. The bank manager looked horrified.
"You'll need to sign it."
"I signed for the check."
"You need to sign the check. If you don't sign the check, anyone can. It's as good as cash. Anyone can make it out to anyone they want and sign their name, and then you would have no right to it."
"But I have the check."
"What if the check is stolen?"
"Do you expect the check to be stolen?"
"It's not what I expect, but it could happen."
"But no one knows I have it, unless your bank told someone."
"Is your bank in the habit of advertising the business of its depositors?"
While the bank manager struggled to think of a response, Teddy shook his hand, turned, and walked out. Teddy went back to the pier. He logged onto a computer in the lobby and sent an encrypted email to Kevin. The answer came back almost immediately. Kevin had obviously composed it already and was just waiting for a prompt. Omar's full name was Omar Khalidi.
He was rumored to have taken part in death squads, often as leader. His ruthlessness was legendary. Teddy had never encountered him under that name or any other, but the man clearly had acted as if he knew him. It might have been merely his style of intimidation. Still, Teddy wondered why he bothered. Perhaps Floyd Maitland's ugly American act had just rubbed him the wrong way. Whatever the reason, Teddy would have to be on his guard. 67. Teddy took a cab back to Larrington Hotel. He was still dressed as Devon Billingham, but that didn't matter. In the crowd of the convention, no one would notice him at all, at least not in the common areas. He just couldn't let anyone see Devon Billingham entering Maitland's room with a hotel key card. He was in luck. Two people got on the elevator, but neither pushed his floor. He got out of the elevator alone, walked down to Maitland's room, and went in. A man was sitting there. It was Omar. He was holding a gun. Omar's eyes were hard, triumphant. "Not so smart as you think, are you?" "Clearly not. You thought no one would see past that fake mustache and stupid cowboy hat, but I do. You are not Floyd Maitland." Teddy shrugged. "It was a calculated risk. Unfortunately for you, I've had dealings with Maitland. He was an annoying man, but a good businessman. Sold us AK-47s. "I hope you got a good deal." Omar gestured with the gun. "With one hand, reach down and pull your jacket open so I can see your gun." Teddy did as he was told. The shoulder holster hung just where Omar said it would. "Take the gun out with two fingers and set it on the floor, slowly. That's it. Now stand up and raise your hands again. Don't make any sudden moves. You're mine. I could have shot you. I still can. But I want to know who you are and what you're doing. Are you with the CIA? "I am not with the CIA. Who are you with?" Teddy just smiled. Omar scowled. "You have no bargaining power. You talk or you die." "I will talk. Just ask me something I know." "You don't know who you're with?" "I don't know what the sides are. I don't know what the game is. So far, all I know is several people want to kill a black rhino. Why, I have no idea." "For sport." "So they say. But you don't want to kill it." "Why not?" "It does not amuse me." "I doubt if this operation was organized for your amusement." "Why was it organized, I wonder?" Omar said nothing. He rubbed his left eye. Teddy relaxed slightly. Omar frowned. "You look too calm. Why aren't you frightened?" "They teach us not to show fear. It's one of the first classes at Langley." Omar scowled. "That gun must be heavy with the silencer," Teddy said. "Why don't you put it down?" "Last chance," Omar snarled. "You want to talk, or should I shoot you right now?" Tough choice. They're always mad at you when you talk. When you're shot, you get a lot of sympathy." "Stop talking nonsense." "Did you open my hotel safe?" Teddy said gently. The change of subject was too much for Omar. He blinked stupidly. "What?" "My hotel safe. Did you open it?"
"There was nothing in it."
"But you opened it.
Which hand did you use?"
"Why?"
"You're right-handed, aren't you? You're holding the gun in your right hand. But some right-handed people use their left hand on a combination lock. Is that what you did?"
"Why are you saying this?"
"Just passing the time. Why exactly did you open the safe? What were you looking for?"
Why are you being so strange?
You're very strong, aren't you?
Were you ever captured? I bet you'd stand up well to interrogation. Strong man like you. And yet, Teddy pointed, I was right. Your left eyelid's drooping. You did use your left hand on the safe. The Palestinian blinked, no longer sure of himself.
What are you saying?
I figured you'd search my room and open my safe. You know, it's amazing that a small amount of serum